For years in medicine, we would wait until somebody was diseased before we would offer assistance. And even today, a high percentage of all medicine or all medical care is directed towards episodic intervention and crisis intervention. We wait until someone's coronary arteries are all plugged up, and then we jump in and do bypass surgery. Well, personally, I'd like to bypass that altogether. Because, see, we can't. Because heart disease is a disease process that, for a large degree, is diet and stress related. And even cancer has been related to our diets. So if diet and nutrition is so important, and in America technology is so high and food production is so high, why is it that our nutrition is so poor? Well, that is a good question. And, you know, I began pondering this, and I got to thinking, well, what is the response? Who is responsible? Is it, maybe it's a foreign country. They're just causing this bad nutrition. Well, no, that's not the answer. Maybe it's the people that produce the food, or maybe it's the people that pack the food, or the distributors, or maybe it's even the retailer. No, it's not any of those things. You know, it comes down to one word, and that's us. We are responsible for our own nutrition. We are responsible for what we eat. See, because if we didn't buy it, the producers wouldn't produce it, the distributors wouldn't distribute it, and the retailers wouldn't sell it. But it's because that we spend literally billions of dollars each year on prepackaged foods. This is the reason that we continue to see it at Johnny's on the shelf. Well, Bob, what's so wrong with prepackaged foods anyway? Well, I guess there's not really a whole lot wrong with it if you want to be pickled with preservatives or maybe poisoned with additives. Personally, I thought that additives were something they put in oil and not to be added to our bodies. It's been estimated, I've read this in three different articles, and it's been estimated, one article said that there was 1,300 additives, and I think that that's way too low. Another guy says that there's over 3,000, and then another guy says, well, that there's over 10,000 different additives, and somewhere probably between 3,000 and 10,000 different additives are added to our foods. Obviously, not all in the same food, but to different foods that are available. These are to make things look better, to make them taste better, to make them last longer, to make them smell better. There's all kinds of reasons to add something to something. But you know, the facts are that God didn't make it that way. I think it's an interesting fact that in America today, and this has got to be conservative, that they say that if you took every American and divided it by the sugar consumption, that you'd have at least 110 pounds of sugar that each individual consumes. Now, if you look, you know, if you go down to Johnny's and you buy a sack of sugar and it's about this big, you know, and you multiply that by 22 times, that's the amount of sugar that's consumed by the average American. But I think that really, that there's probably some Americans that probably consume at least one, maybe even as high as 2 pounds of sugar a day. You know, I think that there's no question about it, but that we are responsible for our own nutrition. I became interested in nutrition a number of years ago after hearing a couple of stories. And they went something like this. I tried to find the stories that I had read, and I could never find them. But in China a number of years ago, about the time that they figured out the process for polishing. And then, one day, they decided that they could polish this rice, and so they did, and they began feeding the people this polished rice, and then the leftovers, of course, went to the chicken. And it wasn't long until these chickens began looking bad. In fact, a number of them began dying. And they couldn't figure out what in the world was wrong with their chickens. Well, luckily, before all the chickens died, down came an order that it was too expensive to feed the average people this polished rice. And they began feeding them the brown rice again. And within days, the chickens began to look better, and within a few weeks, all the chickens were well. And somebody got to looking at it, they said, you know, all we did was we changed from feeding these chickens white rice to feeding them brown rice. And they went from being ill to being well. What they had done to those chickens is they had had caused them to develop a disease called beriberi. It's a lack of a B vitamin. And the story didn't really stop there, because then I heard another story. And it was about on the high seas, and it was about the same time. And years ago, whenever you went to sea, you run the risk of becoming ill. And they couldn't figure out why all these sailors were always ill. And so the British found out that if they'd take limes along and feed the sailors some limes along while they were gone, that they wouldn't get sick. And the British become known as limeys because they took these limes along. Well, what was happening? Well, the men were developing scurvy because they were not eating vitamin C. And vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin, and if you don't, you can't store it. So if you don't have a ready supply of it each day, over a period of weeks or a month or two, you develop scurvy. Well, that really heightened my interest in nutrition, because here was two incidences where first chickens and then human beings were affected directly by what they ate. And now I want to talk about the diets and the incidence of health in foreign countries. It's interesting that in Japan has one of the highest incidences of stomach cancer. It also has one of the highest intakes of pickled fish. And it's been proven, or at least it's been shown, that the high incidence of pickled fish is directly related to these people developing stomach cancer. On the other hand, Japanese have one of the lowest incidences of heart disease, or the lowest incidences of stroke, or the lowest incidence of high blood pressure. And also, the Eskimos fall in this same category. They have a very low incidence of stroke, high blood pressure, and heart attacks. Well, why is that? Well, first of all, the people primarily were looking at the Japanese, and they said, well, this must be because they have a very low intake of fat. And it's a fact, the Japanese, probably about 10% of their calories that they eat each day is from fat. And in America, it's going to be greater than 40% of the intake that we eat is going to come from fat. If you go to a fast food restaurant and you'd eat something that's been fried, 75% of the calories that you're intaking is going to be from fat. But at any rate, so they looked at that and they said, yeah, it must be because these Japanese have such a low intake of fat, must be why they have a low incidence of cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure and everything. And so, but then they said, look, here we got the Eskimo. Well, the Eskimo looks the same, except for the Eskimo has very high intake of fat. You know, they eat all this seals and whatever. I don't know exactly what they eat, but anyway, it's a very high intake of fat in their diet. And so I said, well, how does that mark up? Well, what they found out was that both these people consumed a lot of fish, a lot of marine animals. And these marine animals had a specific lipid in them. And this lipid causes a blood thinning effect. That's really a misnomer. They don't really thin the blood, but they cause the blood not to clot so readily. And they have decided that this lipid that is present in these fish that the Japanese eat and is present in the fish that the Eskimos eat has the protective properties that Now, I'm not saying that the low-fat diet that the Japanese had isn't effective. I think that that's effective, too. But this lipid that they eat has some effect on the fact that they have very low incidence of cardiovascular disease. And interestingly enough, Shackley realized this a few years ago, and they have developed a product. It's called EPA. It's, you know, see your Shackley dealer about that. But anyway, it's you can take this, and it's the same as eating I don't know, several ounces of fish every day, if you're interested. Also, there was a man named Burkett, and years and years ago, Burkett was a man that lived in, actually, he came from America, went to Africa, and he was a physician, and he noticed that there was a real low incidence of colon cancer in Africans. And he says, why is that? He says, you know, I think it's because these people have such a high-fiber diet. And so he sent these reports back to America, and of course everybody just laughed. They couldn't believe it, that this guy had gone to the dogs over there in Africa. And lo and behold, 30 or 40 or 50 years later now, all you hear on TV is you need to buy All Bran because it'll prevent colon cancer. Why is it, anyway, that fiber seems to be helpful? Well, there's been a lot of posture. A lot of people think about this, and there's two or three reasons. One, it decreases transit time. It makes it the decreases the amount of time that the food actually is in the intestine, so this has less time for toxins to act on the intestinal wall. Number two, it increases the pressure, the interluminal pressure, and there's something about the interluminal pressure that seems to decrease the incidence of colon cancer also. Well, cancer is the second leading cause of death in America after heart attacks. And cancer will kill at least 460,000 people. Now, another 700,000 people are going to find out that they have cancer. So if cancer is number two, heart attacks are number one, then we can see that a large portion of the deaths that are caused each year are diet-related. Now, we all know that smoking is related to lung cancer, and there's also association between smoking and heart disease. And this is to the point that not only is it just on TV, is somebody just making a postulation, but the health insurance people and the life insurance people said, look, we believe it. We believe it so much that we're going to give you a lower premium if you're a non-smoker. So, it's got to be a factor. These people wouldn't offer you a better deal. Also, it's interesting. They did some other studies. Non-smokers are better employees. Why is that? It's because they have fewer sick days. They did a big study on that and found out that smokers were sick a lot more, or at least significantly more, than non-smokers. It's been estimated that 35% of all cancer deaths are related to diet. Also, research has linked fat, alcohol, and to a lesser extent, cured foods in causing cancer. It was stated by one person that fat was probably the most dangerous substance in the American diet. As I said before, fat makes up at least 40% of the average American diet. That was the calories are produced or come from fat. Now, probably no more than 20%, if you were going to have an ideal situation, no more than 20% of the calories should come from fat. Now, there is a high rate of breast, colon, and prostate cancer to high intakes of fat. And it's also been thought to be associated with increasing the risk of cancer of the uterus and ovaries. Now, that in Japan, where the intake of fat is typically low, so is the incidence of the above-named cancers. Well, you might say, well, maybe these people just have a genetic predisposition not to have heart attacks or to have cancer or whatever. Well, somebody thought of that. And they did this study in which they looked at people that had moved from Japan to America. They either moved from Japan to Hawaii, or they moved from Japan to San Francisco. And they found this. They found out that in the first generation, that there was an increased incidence of cardiovascular disease and an increased incidence of these cancers. And by the second generation, that was you could not tell the difference between an American and one of these people that had migrated from Japan and then, you know, was a son. And it's solely because they have changed their dietary habits. In 1968, it was in 1968 that William Hansel of Illinois Cancer Council in Chicago did that study that I just mentioned. It's also interesting that colon and breast cancer was higher among animals fed high-fat diets. Now, why does fat cause trouble? Well, nobody really knows for sure, but they think that it's because it is a promoter. It doesn't actually cause cancer itself, but acts as a promoter. What is a promoter? Well, a promoter is something that makes carcinogenic material more powerful. And scientists suspect that fat increases the level of certain hormones. And hormones are substances that control the activities of organ cells, like ovaries and uteruses and prostates in men. And they believe that these hormones become carcinogenic at high levels and increases the women's chance of developing breast cancer, uterus, and prostatic cancer in men. And fat is also known to promote cancer of the colon, primarily by increasing the amount of bile acids. Interestingly enough, a Dr. Linsky also shared that there was an increased risk of cancer in people that ate meats that were laden with nitrate and nitrites, because these substances can be changed into nitrosamines. Well, where are these nitrates and nitrites found? Well, they're found in ham and turkey and hot dogs and bologna and bacon and sausage. So if you had a turkey for Thanksgiving or Christmas, I can almost guarantee you that it had nitrates in it, unless you went to the health food store and you said, look, I want a turkey that doesn't have that stuff in it. If you had bacon or sausage for breakfast, you had some of these materials that are potentially cancer-causing. There's also been a link between heavy coffee consumption and bladder cancer. Now, we've talked a lot about things that cause cancer. Now, what are some of the things that would be helpful in preventing cancer? Well, there are a number of substances. One of them is beta-carotene. One of them is vitamin C, fiber we've already mentioned, and indoles. Indoles are found in the cabbage family, like cabbage and Brussels sprouts and broccoli. And also the element selenium. In countries where the element selenium is high in the soil, it seems to have a lower incidence of cancer. Well, what is carotene? Carotene is a substance that's converted to vitamin A, and it is found in abundance in foods such as sweet potatoes, pumpkins, tomatoes, and carrots. And they did an interesting study in Western Electric in 1981. I guess they have a captive audience and all these Western Electric employees across the country, and they almost always have a doctor that works at these plants, and they got to thinking about it. Well, let's take a look at the effects of smoking on our employees. And so they did this study, and they found that, lo and behold, people that smoked had a higher incidence of lung cancer. Big deal. And then they did a study, though, that says, look, we're going to take a look here and at these smokers, and we're going to see if there's any, if there's any difference here. We're going to divide them up into groups and see if there's any of these people that have a lower incidence, even though they're smokers, have a lower incidence of cancer. And they did, and lo and behold, they found out that people that consumed diets that were high in carotene, they had a sevenfold decrease in the incidence of lung cancer. A sevenfold. This is, they were eating, in this last group, they were eating 5,000 to 30,000 international units of beta-carotene a day, and that equates to about a half a cup to 2 cups of carrots a day. Now that's just, I mean, you know, most people aren't going to eat a half a cup. That'd be half a cup, that'd be 4 or 5 carrots. I don't know, you know, I didn't figure it out. But you, Shackley, again, has got the jump on some people. They beta-carotene is available in the health food stores. It's also from, it comes from a multitude of sources. One of them is from carrots. That's, and then you can get it from Shackley. Shackley's product comes from algae. They extracted out of algae using, I think, corn syrup, or I mean corn oil, as opposed to benzene and some other substances that they used to get it out of carrots. But why is carotene a cancer-fighting nutrient? Well, there's been a lot of postulation about this, but it's believed that it's because it is an antioxidant. It prevents substances from reacting with oxygen. Vitamin C is also an antioxidant, and research has revealed that vitamin C blocks the conversion of nitrite into nitrosamine. And a Dutch study that was published in 1964 linked stomach cancer with diets low in vitamin C. And in 1981, a man named Curtis Metal of Roswell Park Memorial Institute in Buffalo, New York, found that victims of esophageal cancer ate foods that were rich, ate few foods that were rich in vitamin A, and also had a decreased intake of vitamin C. So vitamin C seems to be important, or a deficiency of vitamin C seems to be important in developing cancer. Now, we've already talked about fiber. There's 6 different types of fiber. You can find fiber in grains. You can get fiber from fruits and from vegetables. And you can eat foods that are high in fiber, or you can take Metamucil. You can Fiberol has got a wafer out now. Shackley's got wafers. Everybody and their dog's got wafers now, so you can go get yourself a great big jar of wafers, and that will help you also if you don't want to eat whole grains and breads and that sort of thing. Also, in 1973, researchers in London, which I've already talked about, found that there was a high incidence of cancer in countries that had low grain consumption. So that makes sense. They have low fiber from low grain. And in 1972 and 1978, Saxon Graham of the State University of New York found victims of stomach and colon cancer ate less cabbage. And I saw this guy on TV, or one of his associates on TV, about, must have been a couple, 3 months ago, and they were talking about this thing again. It's coming back up again. Anyway, they linked 2 members of the cabbage and broccoli and Brussels sprouts to decrease incidence of colon cancer. So we need to increase the amount of broccoli we eat and cabbage and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, nobody has got a Indole capsule out yet. I'm sure it isn't long until you'll be able to also get that by pill. And selenium that I mentioned before, there's an increase in, it seems to help with decreasing cancer of the colon and bladder in people that live places that have high selenium in the soil, and you can get selenium by tablets also if you're interested. And in 1984, the American Cancer Society adopted a set of recommendations for diets. They included eating low-fat diets, staying away from alcohol and cured foods, eat from the cabbage family and foods rich in carotene and vitamin C and whole grains. I was asked a question today about vitamins. You know, did I think that vitamins or whatever were really necessary? And yes, I do. I think that they are really necessary for one reason. They can say, well, I'll go down here to the store and I'll buy some food. It ought to be rich in vitamins and minerals and all that stuff. Well, that sounds good in theory, but you can take a potato, and we can buy potatoes year-round in the United States by just going down to Johnny's or someplace and picking up a sack. But those things aren't produced yesterday. They're produced only once or twice a year, whenever. I don't know much about potato production, but they keep them in cold storage, to make a long story short. And you can, a potato that's very rich in vitamin C, you can take that potato and you can keep it in cold storage for 6 months, and you got about 0, maybe 5% left of your vitamin C content at the end of that period of time. And other vitamins and minerals are affected in similarly. Okay, I've got an article here. This article was from the FDA Consumer. This is put out by the FDA themselves. It's on about vitamin C. And this right here, if nothing else, if what I said ought to convince people that they ought to be taking vitamin C every day just so they'll feel better. Right in this article, produced by them, it says they took a group of 818 people and divided them into two groups, and they studied these people for only 2 months. And what they did was they gave half of the people 250 milligrams of vitamin C four times a day. That's 1,000 milligrams a day. And the other people, they gave them pills that looked exactly the same. They tasted exactly the same. Nobody knew. It was what they call a double-blind study. The other group, they got sugar pills. Okay, what happened at the end of 2 months? At the end of 2 months, the people who received vitamin C, 26% of them remained free of illness, compared to only 18% of the people that did not take vitamin C. So there was an 8% increase in the number of people that remained just totally asymptomatic during the whole 2 months. Now, the greater difference was found in the days confined to the house. In other words, of the people that got sick, either in the vitamin C group or in the non-vitamin C group, they took a look at those people, and they found out that the people that took vitamin C were only confined to their house for 1.3 days, where the people that did not take vitamin C were confined to their house for 1.87 days, which means that almost 1.5 times longer they were sick. So I just brought this along. It is supported by the FDA, and so for whatever. Here's another article that I picked up. It's called Fast Foods, Where's the Nutrition? And that's really the truth. They did a study. It's not in this article right here, but Dr. Bland, who works for Shackley, he did a study on the coleslaw found in Kentucky Fried Chicken. He found that there was no vitamin C left in the sample of coleslaw that they analyzed. Why is that? Vitamin C ought to be very high in coleslaw. The reason is probably because they kept it stored for a long period of time. But at any rate, to make a long story short, I'm not getting on Kentucky Fried Chicken, because we could have done that with anybody and we'd have found the similar results. You just don't get any nutrition over there. And whenever you start getting fried foods at these places, I have a friend that's into nutritional medicine in Oklahoma City, and she just got through telling my buddy the other day, she says, you go to the fast food restaurant and you order something that's fried. She says, that's just like asking for IV. That's like, you know, giving it in the IV here. IV poison. She says, there's not much difference. And that's just about the truth. It has, I read an article that, it's not in here either, but anyway, it talks about the amount of fat. I already alluded to it, that up to 75% of the calories that you might receive from eating at one of these places, if you had a totally fried meal, could be up to 75% would be from fat. You know, that's not any good. And that's the conclusion of my part of this this now. We're going to let Glenda get up in just a second. I'm not going to let her get up quite yet, though. Most of you all see Glenda in the role of a housewife, but I knew Glenda some 20 years ago, back whenever she had a little bit different role. And starting in junior high school, Glenda did live animal research out at the FAA, and she went from there to the VA hospital whenever she was in high school and did live animal research over there. And she went to college and got a double major in chemistry and biology, and then worked in the biochemistry lab for 4 years while I went to medical school. She probably is one of the smartest people I've ever known, and I'm proud to introduce her right now.
Today, while I was scoring some of the paces, I came across a verse. It's Hebrews 12:1, and I think it fits in with tonight. It says, "Let us lay aside every weight and sin, and let us run with patience." And I thought that is true, but in a funny way, too. I'm excited to talk about nutrition because I'm excited about nutrition. I'm excited because I'm committed to eating right. I want to encourage some of you that have never thought about what goes into your mouth to think more about what you're actually eating, and give some specifics to those of you that are totally committed to eating right, but you don't have enough facts and you're wanting to know how to apply it better in your life. Bob built me up, and I appreciate that, but I'm not an expert in any way. I have read a lot of books and articles, and I'm trying to apply things in my life and in my family's life that I want to share with you. But I really feel it's just a discovery for yourself and how good nutrition applies to you, because I feel God's not preparing us to die. I feel He's preparing us to live. Proverbs 12:8 says, "A man shall be commended according to his wisdom," and another version says, "according to his common sense." Bob and I have been interested in nutrition for about 3.5 years, and we've made a gradual change in our eating habits. It's not been just right at first. In fact, we've even set some new goals in 86, and we've learned a lot from our study, which I think is why the Lord has us do this in the first place. But I'm excited because our body cells regenerate. There's hope that in 7 years, for instance, I'll be a new me when I give myself new building blocks to work with. And we have heard of, just known personally and then read so many testimonies where crisis situations have really been turned around just by applying the principles of good nutrition. Bob and I know a lady that's lost about 100 pounds, maybe more. She won't tell us because then she said, "Then you'll know how much I used to weigh." But we asked her how she did it, and she said, "Well, I've eaten less. I've eaten lots of fresh fruits and vegetables," and that it had taken her about 1.5 years. So whether or not she knew it, she was applying the principles of good nutrition, and she'd been consistent in her lifestyle for 1.5 years to eat right. I believe that God wants us healthy. 3 John 2 says, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers." And in the Amplified, it says, "and that your body may keep well." I like to read about Moses. It says in Deuteronomy 34:7, "And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated." And it says, "And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." Our eyes are dim, and our forces are abated by the time we're 30 or 35 or 40. I desire to be in God's army, and I think He's preparing one. I want to be a fit soldier, ready and able. If I'm not raptured first, I want to go to heaven with a good, functioning, sound mind and body. I don't want to go be sick. I want to go because my time's up. Romans 12:1-2 says, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable, which is your spiritual worship." Another one says, "Reasonable service." And 1 Corinthians 6:20 says, "For you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." I like that. I heard one pastor say, "The church is fat and out of breath." And I thought, even more so the individual saints. The battle's on. And I really think there's work to be done. I feel we're training for battle. If God asked many of us for endurance that was either physical or spiritual, we'd drop like swatted flies, fat and out of breath. I don't think we can disregard God's natural and spiritual laws anymore and get by with it. I feel we're going to have to make a commitment to a life that's more pleasing to God. And then we might walk with the Lord face to face. Bob and I were at a meeting a couple of months ago. There was a man from a physician from Parkland Hospital in Dallas, which is a huge 1,000-bed hospital. He was a clinical pharmacologist. And he was talking about high blood pressure and heart attacks and kidney disease and how these different drugs that he was selling and pushing and what could be used in their management. And he said these were all life-threatening crisis situations that he was treating. And he said, "For those patients unwilling to change lifestyles, certain drugs are preferred." And then he went on to talk about how these drugs were life-threatening themselves. They had side effects that were worse than the heart attacks or whatever the people were dying from. The implication was few people are willing to change how they live. They're facing premature death, but they'd rather eat their sweet rolls and their alcohol and live their stress-filled lives. They'd rather die than do that, and that's what they're doing. They're dying. I think we've separated the man has separated physical laws from the creator of them. And like Bob said, I'm not an expert. I just happen to like science. And that's where you could have found me before. But I don't see a conflict between science and God, the creator. I think eventually that science will match up to God's divine wisdom and his divine laws. How do I account for people eating sweet rolls and pop for breakfast and pizza and pop for dinner and pretzels and onion rings and beer for whenever and maybe cocktails in between? God's grace. And I think we're presuming on it. I'm not going to tell you about how fiber changed my whole life, but it did give me a new lease on life. That's the truth. And I'm not going to talk a lot about dieting, because I don't think it matters whether you have one or two extra rubber tires or whether you're real thin or big. I think what's important is that we start giving our bodies the right building blocks from time now. 3 years ago, in order to please God and serve him better, I knew that I was going to have to feel better. I didn't feel good, and life was to be endured. It was a miracle if I made it through the day. And I decided that if I was going to be in the race, I might as well go for the prize. There were several things about that time that really focused our attention on nutrition. One was that we noticed every time Yancey ate hot dogs, he got sick. And we didn't eat hot dogs at our house because in the biochemistry lab, and just from what we knew the nitrites and nitrates weren't any good. So we didn't eat hot dogs or bologna in our house. But he'd go to a friend's house or the basketball game, and he'd come home and be sick, and it was always undigested hot dogs. And about that same time, we noticed that when he ate artificial grape anything, he would bounce off the walls. He would be very hyperactive. And we noticed that when he ate a lot of candies or Cokes. So we started asking the Lord for wisdom about better health. And we thought, well, if it affected Yancey this way, how is it causing us dis-ease in some way? So we started reading more on nutrition. And one of the articles I ran across was on premenstrual syndrome. And I don't know if any of you have heard of that, especially the guys. But when I When I read this article, I boo-hooed like a baby. It was like the first time you realized that the Lord was so gracious to forgive all your sins. This was symptoms that were documented as happening in other women. Water retention, abdominal bloating, irritability, sick, pounding headaches, sleepiness, panic, depression, unnamed aches and pains everywhere. But the important thing was, in the article, it said that what you ate could either lessen the symptoms or it can make matters worse. So one other thing that really convinced me about diet and how it could affect how you felt is I read an article on migraine headaches or vascular headaches that cause this pounding in your head. And it had a list of foods that could aggravate or migraine headaches. And one of them was cheese. And I'm a great list maker. In fact, I keep notes and lists from way back when, because I write down my prayer requests and the answers to prayer and devotions and just the things I have to do for the day. I think mostly to tell myself that I have done something worthwhile. So I check these off. But I noticed it. I found a little slip of paper, and it was from 10 years before, and it said, had sick headache today. And that's one of those where you feel nauseous, but you don't really throw up, and you can't quite stand light and noise. And then I looked on the day before, and it said, ate pizza. And for us back then, that was a real treat to get to go and eat pizza. But I thought, aha, cheese. And then I eat more recently, when we go to Oklahoma City, when we'd be coming back home on Sunday afternoon, I felt awful. And so I reviewed what we ate, and we usually head out on a Friday, and we'd stop by Elk City at the taco place and have Mexican food with cheese. And then on Saturday afternoon, we'd have chili and cheese hamburger. And then in the evening, we'd have pizza with extra cheese. And by Sunday, I feel awful. So I haven't eaten cheese but once in 3 years. Praise the Lord. I thank him for his wisdom. To me, that is asking the Lord for wisdom and him answering that. I feel he's no respecter of persons, so that if you ask him for wisdom, he will guide you also in the same way. Now, before you say, swell, I don't have PMS, guys. Bob and I have found out, like he shared, that there's what we eat or don't eat makes a difference in many of our diseases. And I don't think he mentioned arthritis, but and hypoglycemia, and just our thought processes, how we think. And you might say, well, I'm taking a multiple vitamin, and I get the suggested RDA or recommended daily allowance. And besides, sometimes I eat from the four food groups. I am convinced that the minimum daily requirements, the RDA, are only enough to keep you alive, to keep you well, but not to ensure good health. Yancey brought home this food chart in the second grade from the public school, and it's probably what we all were brought up on, and that's if you eat from the four food groups, you have it made. It will ensure fantastic health. This is the 4-2-4-4 plan. It recommends 4 minimum servings from milk and 2 from meat and 4 from fruits and vegetables and 4 from breads and cereals. And this is James. It says what he has for the day, and it implies that he did very well. He ate 4, 4, 3, and 7. So he did well. But if you look at what he ate, you can see that he didn't do very well. The first one was a fried egg, and that swelled unless it was fried in Crisco, because Crisco is a solid oil, and so highly saturated and preservatives, and then the egg had cholesterol, so if he eats just one every day of the week, that's not good. He had one slice of toast with butter. If it was a white bread, and what teenager will eat brown bread anyway, then it had no fiber whatsoever. It had refined sugar and preservatives. It had bromine, which is a nerve poison, to bleach the flour in the first place. Then he had a glass of orange juice. And if it was the real thing, which possibly it wasn't, because now everything's only 10% juice, and it wasn't artificially colored or flavored, if it had been made up in the refrigerator for more than 2 days, it didn't have any vitamin C in it anyway. He had a cup of hot chocolate, and hot chocolate, if it was the real stuff and had real refined sugar in it, then he got lots of sugar, and he got caffeine from the chocolate, if it was real chocolate. And chocolate has theobromine, which is a stimulant, and has methyl relaxant properties, but perhaps it had saccharin in it, or may have had aspartame, we don't know. But it says two sandwiches with two slices of bologna in each. Well, we've already gone over the nitrates and the nitrites and the artificial coloring that's in the meat. Not to say anything about, oh, the two pieces of bread for each sandwich, but that doesn't have any fiber either. And one banana. Now, he did well. He did well. He ate a banana. One medium milkshake. And the milkshake probably had lots of refined sugar. We know it has lots of fat, and it has other bad things I'll explain in a minute. He had one glass of lemonade, which we're not sure if it was the real thing or if it was the totally artificial colored and flavored also. Two pork chops, which it was probably fried in Crisco again. And then if not, he probably had lots of ketchup with it, and ketchup is 30% sugar. Two dinner rolls with jelly. Of course, they were white dinner rolls again, and then the jelly had lots of sugar in it. One baked potato with butter, but this fella doesn't eat the skin, so he didn't get any of the nutrients or the fiber there. And two glasses of milk. And I'm not here to take a plug at apple pie, but milk's not all it's cracked up to be. Let me see if I can find where it... Homogenized milk is milk that's been processed to break up its fat content into very little tiny particles so that they won't settle out. But there, I know of two physicians at least. One is at Park City Hospital in Connecticut, and the other one's at Harvard. They both support the finding that homogenized milk, because of its xanthine oxidase content, is one of the major causes of heart disease in the United States. An estimated 1 million Americans will die of this heart-related disease, according to the American Heart Association. And so there are other ways of getting your calcium. So we can see that James, if he eats this kind of a diet over the years, is not going to get the nutrients and the vitamins that he needs. Also, I read... about refined sugar, and refined sugar causes depression and lethargy and this shaky feeling, and can cause the hyperactivity. Let's take this a step further. I fished these two things out of the Wheeler Christian Academy trash can the other day. One of them is Grandma's peanut butter two big cookies. The second thing it lists, besides the enriched flour, unbleached or bleached, is sugar. It also has preservatives, BHA and BHT. It has hydrogenated soybean oil, which we prefer totally unsaturated. Let's see, it has corn syrup and fructose listed and artificial flavor. So it could be worse, but you could live without it a long time. I also got this from a pizza box. Seems real popular at the Wheeler Christian Academy. In the crust, it says enriched bleached bromated. The bromine was the nerve poison that I mentioned, flour. Then it has, besides the flour and water, the next thing is dextrose, and that's a sneaky way of saying glucose, which is the sugar that's in our bloodstream, goes right to the bloodstream. It also had calcium propionate, which it says is a mold inhibitor, but that is also a preservative. Something I can't read what it is, and so I don't know if it's good or bad. In the sauce, it has lots of, it says salt right up there at the top. In the toppings, sausage, and it has a mozzarella cheese substitute. I don't know what that is, but partially hydrogenated soybean oil, salt, sodium aluminum phosphate, so you're ingesting aluminum, which your body doesn't get rid of, sodium citrate, sodium trisodium phosphate, potassium sorbate preservative, artificial colors, smoked sausage, salt, more salt, more dextrose, monosodium glutamate, which is not good, a nerve enhancer that we don't need, sodium erythorbate, which I don't know what it is, but I think it's a preservative, sodium nitrite, more sugar, more sodium glutamate, on and on. There. Foods that Americans eat do not provide the right nutrients or the sufficient number of nutrients to keep our bodies healthy. And like Bob alluded, it's because they're not as God made them. And let's look quickly at some reasons why. They all stem around our fast food lifestyles. But one is the processing and storage. We take out what God puts in, and that's why our food is called high-calorie but low-nutrient food. We, besides the storing that Bob mentioned, is the processing. We irradiate our foods or expose them to X-ray to prevent spoilage. Onions will keep for 16 months that have been irradiated, but they'll sprout within 90 days otherwise. And they do the same to wheat and to potatoes and spice. And this produces free radicals, which are harmful and have been implicated in our immune system breakdown. And I feel that's what we're seeing these days, where we're so susceptible to these different viruses and other things that we should be immune to. It affects the vitamin A and B and C and E and proteins in our food. And then, of course, we've already said the highly processed food lacks the fiber. Another reason food isn't as God made it, and actually it's poisonous, is that not only does it not have the nutrients we need, but it depletes the ones that we have in our body and that are in our food. And one of the reasons is the additives that Bob mentioned, too. One kind of the additives is the preservatives, and I've read you, they are in there. A general rule I have is I've tried to learn the scientific names of the vitamins and minerals, and if I don't know it past that, I don't buy it. The list is like calcium propionate, sodium propionate, and you find that in bread, BHA, and I know Maggie went over a lot of different preservatives in her late nutrition course, benzoic acid, sodium benzoate, the nitrates and nitrites in meats, and sulfates. And I know Carol Abick was sharing with me that it was an uncle, right, that they felt passed away in the restaurant after eating salad that had the sulfates in it to keep the lettuce fresh. And then, of course, we get the aluminum and all that that's in our food. Also, another kind of additive besides preservatives are the artificial colors and flavors. You can get artificial almost anything. The FDA has banned that red dye number 5, which used to be in hot dogs, which I thought, too, might cause Yancy to be sick. But they're considering three others. Red dye number 3 to decide if they're cancer-causing enough to ban them. And, of course, the lobbying groups are there lobbying that, no, of course, there's no real proof, and so let's keep them. Then, of course, when we take out all these, the fiber and all the nutritious stuff, we have to add stuff back in, and that's a bulk agent. One that has really made me chuckle is silica gel. Now, I have that somewhere. Let me see if I can find it. I don't know if you all are aware of seeing this stuff. This is silica gel, and it comes in your shoes to keep them dry. I know we use it in chemistry to keep... But this I got out of some pills to keep the pills from sticking together. But it's also found in chili and taco packets and in a lot of other foods just as a filler. It keeps it dry, and then you realize that way that you're paying for a lot when you pay your 59 cents for taco stuff and not for a fourth of a teaspoon of spices. But also, like, they put cornstarch in powdered sugar. That's what helps keep it dry and flaky. Other additives come not intentionally, and some intentionally, but they're chemicals that are used in the processing. Like Bob said, benzene is something that we find in our foods that they've used, and I didn't write it down, so I don't know for sure what they use what they're extracting when they do that. But one, and I would be interested if you all know about this one, propylene glycol. Now, to me, this sounds like antifreeze. I don't understand, but it's in Pops, Dr. Peppers, and it's in food coloring. It's in a lot of what we buy. I also noticed it's in wet wipes, baby wet wipes. Don't know about that. But many other petroleum products. I know Parafilm, we're seeing more and more of that used to coat our cucumbers and apples, and it's in our candies. There's some chocolate candies you can spend hours chewing because of all this Parafilm that's left. And formaldehyde, I'm not positive about this, but I had heard that that's what they use for decaffeinating colas and teas. That's what we use to pickle specimens in zoology, folks. And then, of course, we mentioned the bromine, which is the bleaches flower. But Bob says it's bromine's used some way in medicine as a nerve, does something to our nerves. And then, of course, we have the unintentional additives, like the antibiotics and the hormones that get in the meat. And to me, this causes concern because Bob sees a lot of children that he can't tell really what's wrong with them. But how do we know that they don't have a reaction to antibodies that they're eating as soon as they start eating all the meat that we're giving them? And then we haven't even mentioned the pollution in the air and the water. Pesticides is interesting to me. 1 billion pounds of chemicals are sprayed on our crops every year in the United States and can drift for up to 80 miles. And we heard some testimonies of people that were caught out in pesticide drifts, you know, and got soaked, and they're horror stories. And then also plant growth inhibitors and herbicides, and all the products from our manufacturing, like the anti-tarnish agents that they use in metal manufacturing, and rocket and aircraft fuel have all these hydrazides in them that aren't any good, deplete our B6 and other vitamins. And then we have mentioned the cigarette smoke. And like Bob said, 30% of all cancer deaths are tobacco-related. Nicotine from smoking decreases vitamin C by up to 30%. So if you're a smoker or if you know someone, they really need to be encouraged to take more vitamin C. And then we haven't mentioned stress either. So, but you can see that the world and the food that we eat is no longer as God made it. Therefore, we need more nutrients, and that's why I can say confidently I support supplements. And if you can't grow your own food and get your own, eat your own. Okay, let's look at some specifics of the nutrients that we do need. We've seen that we've depleted them all out, but what is it that we do need? Just look just a minute at sugar. We hear a lot about sugar. Sugar is listed as glucose, sucrose, fructose, corn syrup, dextrose, honey, or molasses. And some people say, well, you can eat as much honey as you want, but you definitely should leave off the table sugar. In what Bob and I have studied, I cannot see that there is anything good or any excuse for adding sugar to your food or eating food that has had sugar added to it, because it produces this roller coaster kind of effect. An example is an individual with a steady blood flow of glucose eats a candy bar or cola for instant energy. The result is a sudden surge of energy, a kind of a high feeling, and suddenly their glucose level goes up, and so a lot of insulin's put out to regulate this blood sugar. But inevitably, a few hours later, they experience this low and this craving need for more sugar. So they eat more sugar. So you can see if you start with a sugar-laced breakfast, like Kellogg's Apple Jacks is 50% sugar, and Fruity Pebbles is 48% sucrose. And that's not a complex sugar, but sucrose that goes right into the bloodstream. And then you have colas at 10, 2, and 4, and desserts and a couple of cocktails after dinner, then you can see why so many Americans are hooked on sugar. Sucrose is a 50-50 mixture of glucose, which is this blood sugar, and fructose, and it's just, as soon as it hits your mouth, it's starting to go into your bloodstream. and so it requires insulin. Brown sugar is 95% pure sucrose, and then they've added brown syrup to coat it, and it makes it look brown. But and molasses is a product of the refining of sucrose, so it has a lot of the impurities, but it has sucrose in it too. Fructose, a lot of people talk about. Refined sucrose is just as bad as refined sucrose in that it's quickly absorbed. But if you eat it in the form of fruits and vegetables, then it's a good form of sugar. Corn syrup is corn starch that they put enzymes with and make turn it into glucose and sucrose. And I can't see that it's much better. The solids would be the solid. If it says corn syrup solids, that would be preferred over liquid corn syrup. And then we have honey. Honey is natural sugar formed by enzymes on nectar. But it's the same. All foods are broken down to glucose eventually. So the honey, which is fructose and sucrose and glucose and maltose, eventually is broken down. And so it's a little more complex, but too much honey is just as bad as too much sucrose. And I know that the doctors don't tell diabetics that they can eat as much honey and fructose as they want. So I try to buy unprocessed, unfiltered honey. And I use it in my cooking, and I have been committed and I have resolved to quit eating so much honey because I think I'm overdosing on honey just like I did sucrose. But I buy the unprocessed, raw, unfiltered honey because it has pollen in it. And bee pollen can be up to 35% protein, and it has a lot of essential vitamins in it, like vitamin C and vitamin H, and it has manganese and potassium and copper and calcium and iron. And so you can see when the Bible says that John the Baptist grew up on wild locusts and honey, God knew what he was doing. He was getting lots of bee pollen in there as well as his sugar. And I take bee pollen for energy and stamina just because it's high in these nutrients that our body needs. So I would say avoid sugar that you add or others add to your food, and use raw honey or molasses for your cooking. And for sweetness, I found like in my muffins and cookies that you can put raisins and dates and fruits, and they're more complex, and they still give a sweetness to it. But when you eat Heinz tomato ketchup, you are not eating tomatoes, folks. It's 30% sugar. Ice cream is 21% sugar compared to like a peach is 6%. Hershey's bar is 51% sugar. Coffee Mate is 65% sugar. Shake and Bake. See, now who would think it had sugar in it? 50% sugar, whereas a carrot's only 5% and an apple's only 5%. So I say leave off all sugar that you add. I wanted to talk some about vitamins, but I think Bob's alluded to the need for those. And you can get them by eating raw fruits and vegetables. And I like to steam my vegetables. If you do boil them, you can save the water from the boiling to use in your soup stocks. And frozen foods are good. I have some articles on aspartame if you're interested in that. And then we haven't mentioned salt, whether or not we need salt or don't need salt. We all need salt, but we could get everything we need in the foods we eat. We wouldn't have to add any salt. And if you're into reading labels, anytime it says sodium, that's the same as salt. So if you have sodium chloride, that's salt. Sodium bicarbonate, that's a baking soda. Sodium benzoate is a preservative. Disodium phosphate, monosodium glutamate. Anytime it has sodium hidden in there, that's the same as salt. One thing I wanted to add quickly, and that's about amino acids, and I could talk a long time about amino acids and what they're finding out about what they do in our body. But there are 22 amino acids. 8 of them are known as essential. They're all essential to our health, but 8 of them our bodies can't manufacture, so it's essential that we take them in our diet. They are unstable and they're not stored. These 8 essential vitamins can be gotten in rice and beans. The rice by itself doesn't have all 8, nor do beans. But it was significant to us because, like, when we went to Belize, which is South American or Central American country, I expected to see the typical malnutrition, bloated stomachs because these poor people don't have the right kind of food to eat, certainly not the variety that they should. They ate rice and beans, and they were, in some respects, healthy because they were getting the eight essential vitamins and minerals that many Americans aren't getting. And Bob and I noticed at the health food store there's a bread called Ezekiel 4:9 bread. And from the Bible, God says take, and I don't know if it's seven or eight different kinds of grains, barley and millet and wheat and corn, and make bread from these. And this has the eight essential known vitamins. So it's exciting to me. God does. He is a good nutritionist. He knows all about that, even way back there in the Old Testament. But and I could talk a lot about phenylalanine and methionine and tyrosine and how they can improve how you look at the world and help your PMS if you have that. Now let's get down to specifics, what to do. And this is to make the fellows more tolerant with their wives as they try to implement some of this and to give you some tips. But the first thing is to ask God for wisdom. See if there's something that you need to apply in your life. And James 1:5 says that if we'll ask, he promises to give us that wisdom liberally. Start reading all you can to find out about foods. And I know, like, this little prevention magazine. You all may be... Do you all know about Prevention Magazine? Okay. But I'd recommend that just because it gets you excited about reading more about nutrition. And take everything you read with a grain of salt. And you may read one article one day that says definitely you have to have fiber, and you'll turn right around and read an article that says you don't need all that fiber. But to me, the Lord has led me to find out what's best for me in my life, and I know He'll do the same for you. Gradually introduce nutritional food to your family. Like, it's taken us 3.5 years to change how we eat. Experiment and disguise. If you're going to fix spaghetti, you might try half and half, whole wheat spaghetti noodles and regular white. And if your kids just will not tolerate brown bread, then try disguising it in muffins or French toast or whatever. Experiment with your family's taste and what they eat. I know the Files have been convicted to eat maybe like two meals a day instead of the conventional three. And certainly I think the scriptural supports that. In the wilderness, the people were fed in the morning and in the evening. And the ravens fed Elijah twice a day. So Bob eats twice a day. He eats lunch and dinner and does away with breakfast. I eat six times a day, plus sometimes I eat lots of small meals, high-protein meals. But so just experiment with your family's taste. And then try to find out what is good at the supermarket that you can buy and start reading the labels. If you can't read it, don't buy it. And try to get as much from the produce area and fix it yourself. And that's hard to do, except I know when I cook lots, and then I freeze three times as much as what we're just eating that meal. And with it already cooked and frozen, it's easier to fix up. Consider supplements. And like Bob said, the vitamin C and B complex, you've heard a lot about that in stress-related life. But B6, let me just read you something that I have about B6. Find that. This article that I found on B6 kind of gives you an idea of what's happened to our vitamins. B6 is an enzyme, coenzyme, that's used in more than 50 enzymes in our body. And so you can see that anything that interferes with B6 also interferes with these 50 different enzymes and what they do in our body. But a typical diet has lost perhaps 50% or more of it's B6, and it's just due to our refining of the sugar and canning of vegetables and overheating our meats and especially our vegetable oils. Also, B6 is depleted because of these anti-tarnish agents that they use to plate metals with. At least one food coloring depletes B6. Several herbicides and plant growth inhibitors inhibit B6, along with cigarette smoke and some prescription medicines. Malic hydrazide is a plant growth inhibitor and a herbicide, and it's sprayed on tobacco and potatoes and onions. And they say it's really concentrated in potato chips. Succinic acid 2,2-dimethylhydrazide is sprayed on peaches, nectarines, tomatoes, Brussels sprouts, cherries, grapes, apples to shorten the ripening time. So I would say grow your own or wash your fruit. I don't know. Try changing from coffees and colas that have the caffeine in them to other things like herbal teas, but you need to be careful about the herbal teas. You need to use some wisdom there. I drink a coffee substitute, I'll call it, called Pero, and it's barley, made from barley. And Bob and I have really enjoyed just water, mineral water with lemon or limes in it. And then you can buy the pure fruit juices and make popsicles for your kids. Try to cook with a lot of more, we've said, broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts. And Sister File was sharing with me that just baked sweet potatoes have a really good sweet taste to them. And I like to use the fresh spinach leaves to make spaghetti. Back when I first started out, I know, in order to get my family to eat spinach, I would hide it in the spaghetti sauce. You know, it's about a fourth of a cup of spinach you can kind of blend in your blender, and it's a little different color, but nobody knows the difference. Change to the whole wheat bread and pastas. And I was going around saying, oh, you must try this Rhodes bread that I got at Johnny's. It's the frozen, and you let it rise, and it looks homemade. And then I noticed after doing this that the second ingredient was dextrose. And all this time I'd just gone over that. Well, the dextrose is glucose. So I have a New Year's resolution to start making my own bread. Your bread should say unbleached on it. If it says bleached, then it's not good. And there are some breads that are just made with honey or molasses. And And the one thing that I would say is essential to buy at the health food store is the cold-pressed unsaturated oils. But I've also found that Butter Buds, and I think I was showing somebody the box, is a good substitute for butter and other kinds of fats. It says natural butter flavor mix. It only has 6 calories per tablespoon. So it has no cholesterol. And I use it like for pouring over potatoes, or I use it in the baking. But it's good because it doesn't have the fat in it, and it tastes like butter. No, I think I got this at Gibson, but Johnny's may have it too. Seems like it's in with the other dairy products. Salad dressings are something to really watch. They have lots of preservatives and they're really fat, high fat content. So I've tried to make my own with limited success. One that we like is Newman's, and you can buy it at Thriftway. It's Newman's salad dressing, and it doesn't have any preservatives. It's all natural. But I've also tried taking the Mrs. Dash. Do you all know about Mrs. Dash? And putting it in vinegar and oil, and making my own, boiling it, and then using that kind of. But that's one area that I need some more ideas about. I don't think that Christians or people who eat right have to miss out on anything. We have muffins at our house, and we have Superman pancakes. Superman pancakes I make with Aunt Jemima whole wheat pancake mix. But then I add protein powder and lecithin and anything else I can get in there. And then we put our honey or applesauce on it, and no one knows the difference unless I tell them. You might try freezing grapes. I don't know if I've shared that with. And someone said sliced bananas. You can slice bananas real thin and feed them to your family, frozen. And incorporate more long grain brown rice and beans. And
beans.
But well, yes. Okay, I'm thinking more of the dried beans, more like the black-eyed and the Great Northern and the Small Northern and Baby Limas. And you can buy a lot at the health food store, and sometimes at the bigger supermarkets you can buy the unsalted corn chips. I was at Safeway in Pampa and noticed that they had a pretty good nutrition section of their store. So we like wok foods. That's W-O-K, Chinese stir-fried foods. I'd recommend that because you can chop up lots of vegetables and just a small amount of meat and stir-fry it quickly. Eat more fish. Notice one spaghetti sauce that I've used before. It's Prego, and it doesn't have any salt in it, no sugar. Others I know could have given this talk much better than I could have. One of them is a friend in Woodward, Oklahoma, named Diane Evans, and she's really been an inspiration and a help to me in a way that I hope I can encourage you. But she's writing a book on nutrition, and she, besides my husband, she is one of the best common cold physicians I know. She treats her family with herbs and does a good job. She breaks out the garlic and the bee propolis and the vitamin C's, and she can make you a compress that'll fix anything you have wrong. But she grows her own herbs. She dehydrates her food. She cooks her long grain brown rice and dehydrates it, and then it's sitting there ready to put in soup stocks right away. And I know for Christmas she asked for a juicer, but she really knows a lot and applies it to her life and her family's life. And another one we've already mentioned is Martha Harrison. I think Brother Griffin's daughter Andrea calls her Miss Alfalfa. Our people call her Miss the Shackley Lady. They'll say, "The Shackley Lady's at the door, Mother." But she's been an encouragement to me. And seriously, the testimony of how her husband's health crisis 10 years ago was turned into 10 years of added life is a testimony worth hearing. And they give the credit to the Lord. But also, Shackley products and just the principles of good nutrition made the difference. I'm impressed by her because of her vitality at her age and just her natural beauty. And I know she applies this good nutrition in her life. And I know she's into canning and juicing. And if you haven't met her, she would be an encouragement to you. And my friend Maggie Marshall at the back, I enjoyed her latent nutrition course. And she's also the MetaFresh distributor. But she's the latent nutrition course I enjoyed. And I think Bambi took it with me. And the basics of vitamins and minerals and proteins and carbohydrates. And I know she's applying that to her life. And they raise their own chickens and have their own garden. And Gloria Brown is applying wisdom in the area of nutrition, too. And I know she and Maggie have had some dealing with children with serious problems, health problems that could be related to diet. And I'm interested to see how that works out. But all of you sitting here, I know, are interested in good nutrition. And I think nutrition is a part of this education and living, the same kind of education that we're trying to get our kids to be aware of. It has to do with right choices and a commitment to excellence and using what God makes available to you. I believe God's getting the Christians ready in a mighty way. I think both sides are preparing their foot soldiers. And you'll see it if you go to any health food store. Satan's there too. And you have to be careful what you read and take in. But I believe that the body under the whole armor is going to be fit for service in the King's army. So my challenge to you ladies is to keep a notebook and take notes and read what you can about it and introduce it as much as you can to your family. And there'll be a lot of things you throw away, sometimes before you even taste it, because you can smell it. And your family will not be behind you, but I think that's what I've been impressed about with these people that I've noticed. They haven't let that they haven't let that bother them. You'll need to take a stand and be firm. And I think really as soon as our husbands see that our families are healthier and so it's costing them less at the doctor, that they'll be behind you. I think we're going to need to be wise about what we provide for our family's health and what we seek professional medical help for and when to call on the name of Jesus, coming against Satan himself. Because I think it's that complex and that interwoven. I believe as we start worshiping in spirit and truth and listening to the shepherd's voice, that God will start leading us in a more supernatural way than we've seen before. And that we're going to have to, because we're going to be on the battlefront. So it had occurred to me some time ago that if God can't be trusted in my circumstances, where I am, with what I have, as I am, then he can't be trusted at all. And I had a need to feel better to serve the Lord, and God met that need. So I challenge you to let God take care of your need, whether it's in the area of nutrition or finances or whatever it is, because I found that his promises are true. And if you ask him for wisdom, he'll give it to you.